It's a transformation for Jacksonville Community Council, Inc., or JCCI. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening on this first day of March. Hope you're having a good morning out there. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live at 9. Also, never miss a show. Download the WJCT app and listen anytime. We're streaming the audio of this show right now, too, on our Facebook page. Just ahead, how JCCI is transitioning into the new Citizen Engagement Pact. What are your questions? Give us a call, 549-2937. Then later, the latest treatments for colorectal cancer and why it's striking more young Americans. Plus, local author Abby Vega and a preview of the women's leadership event Gen W. All of that ahead. But first this hour, Jacksonville Community Council, Inc., or JCCI, recently announced a major change. Instead of being a standalone entity, JCCI is transforming into the Citizen Engagement Pact. What does that mean? Well, the pact will continue to foster civic engagement to improve the lives of all Jacksonville citizens, but in a new way. Former City Council President and JCCI Board Chair Kevin Hyde joins us now in studio to talk about what this means for the First Coast. Kevin, good to see you. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. How are you?
Great, thanks. And what are your questions about the future of JCCI, now renamed the Citizen Engagement Pact? The local think tank has been a fixture on the First Coast for decades, but had struggled in recent years in terms of fundraising. We want your calls, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect at wjct.org or tweets to at Melissa in Jax. Weigh in as well and listen on our Facebook page. JCCI had been around for decades issuing reports and studies on all manner of critical civic issues. So bring us up to date. JCCI, as we've known it, is no more. It's going to be something different now.
It is. It's as a standalone organization, it will transition to now what is known as the Citizen Engagement Pact. You indicated the history of JCCI going back in this community to 1974 with any number of inquiries over the years on important issues. As we were talking about this last week, we were reminiscing that 9 years ago, JCCI, under the leadership of J.F. Bryan, issued a report about the troubled state of our pension. And obviously, that is an issue which continues for the city. So the work has been very valuable and important. But as a standalone organization, we spent a lot of time over the last 2 years thinking about whether that continued to make sense. And we concluded with the board and some great work by others who joined in to what we called reflective practices study, said we need to do this differently. And that's the idea of the Citizen Engagement Pact.
And why does it no longer make sense for this organization to stand alone?
Well, one of the things we found was so many organizations have developed in town to talk about very discrete and specific issues and really become the subject matter experts on that. Use as an example Jacksonville Public Education Fund, which really owns the education space and can do it better, frankly, than any other organization. And so what we said was they can do the work in that area. Others have developed in specific expertise that JCCI formerly occupied maybe all things to all people. We can now be much more focused and rely on their expertise instead of being a standalone.
And we want to engage the citizens right now with calls to Kevin Hyde. What do you think are the most critical issues facing Jacksonville? What do you think this new Citizen Engagement Pact should focus on? Whether it's crime, education, the environment, give us a call. 549-2937. Raising money for JCCI became more difficult. You were here in our building at WJCT for some time. But as this pact transforms, what do you see as the big issues that it'll be taking up? The 31st edition of your Quality of Life report is now out, correct?
Correct.
And what is it looking at?
Well, it's looking at some of the indicators that we've looked at over the years. Obviously, crime is on everyone's mind continually, public safety issues. A lot more emphasis on health and well-being, and that takes any number of forms. We did work years ago on infant mortality, concluded last year on mental health, but that will be a continuing focus. I know Mayor Curry has tried to make that part of his overall initiative, so that's some of the direction. City finances is going to continue to be an issue that the city has to always look at, so yeah. Many issues on the table.
And what would you say to those over the years who question the efficacy of JCCI, saying they do this incredible work, they put out really important studies highlighting the biggest problems in this community, and then everyone says, that's a really good study, we need to do something about these problems. Mm-hmm. And then nothing gets done in a meaningful way about these critical issues that JCCI was desperately trying to raise awareness and movement about. How do you think this new entity will try to actually move the needle on some of these issues?
Well, I'll go back and use an example, Melissa. When I was in city government, we always relied on the reports that JCCI produced. And so the idea here is for citizens in whatever format, and now through the Citizen Engagement Pact, to bring forth the ideas and the issues to those who are charged with the responsibility of doing something about it, to hold government accountable, to look at community organizations as to bringing forth that work. So we'll continue to raise the issues, but pass them for implementation to those organizations and entities and institutions like government who have that responsibility.
And if you're just tuning in as we speak with Kevin Hyde about the future of citizen engagement here on the First Coast, what do you think is the most critical issue facing this area? What would you like to see studied? Give us a call at 549-2937. How can people be part of this? Who are going to be the major players in this, besides obviously the community?
Right now, if people are interested in going, go to JAXPACT, JAXPACT.org, and there is a place to sign up expressing your interest. We'll be holding organizational meetings this month to talk about both organizations and individuals who want to be involved. This is an evolving structure that we're going to see what people think is the best way to go forward with this work. It will not be as formal and structured as JCCI was, but it will be a way for people to say we're contributing our ideas. And one of the things that we've kicked around, and someone else suggested this idea, so I don't want to take credit for it, it might be time for another Amelia Island Conference, which was a convening of organizations and people to really say on a 10-year outlook, what are the issues we should be thinking about? And I'm hopeful that that's something this new Citizen Engagement Pact can help bring about.
When was the Amelia Island? That's what led to the creation of JCCI back in the 70s.
1974.
What were the big issues when that conference took place, recall?
As we think about that, you were coming off of the consolidation effort of 1968. The government was still very much in its infancy. Even identified then, we need to start thinking about our city finances. So that conference has had resonance over these 40 years and is really something that the community can be proud of because it set the course of the direction of the city.
All right. Let's talk about the new JAX Pact, the Citizen Engagement Pact. It's the new iteration of JCCI. As Kevin Hyde said, go to JAXPACT.org to learn more about this. But right now, we're going to go to your calls. As you engage with us at 549-2937, Conrad is in Arlington this morning. Hey, Conrad, good morning.
Good morning. I've tried to also add, representing the concerned taxpayers of Duval County, the esteemed Tony Bates led six of us to the 2008-9-10 I consider it the most impactful JCCI study, the one on the city finances, pensions, and the minor leg, which was the public trust, which I think was probably, as far as the long-range impact, was the one that was the least noticed and the most critical. That involved the inspector general that was temporarily in place under the former mayor, and the true commission that had been in place since Eric Smith had created it in 1990, I believe it was, and the reinstatement, the attempt to bring back and reinstate the ethics code that had been put on a 37-year hiatus by our local city officials, elected officials, who got their toes stepped on in 1974, 6 years into consolidation, because they were not adhering at all to any sense of the ethics and the public, the obligation of the public trust. So they simply nullified the ethics code for that 37 years. It was a de facto guideline that hung on the wall that they could point to that was totally feckless with no law to back it. But at any rate, Mr. Thompson, what was the chair of that study, and he and Skip Kramer, who was the director over there at the time, and Ben Warner, they did such a really great job of bringing together people from every segment of the community. We probably got the least cooperation out of the mayor, who couldn't be inconvenienced to show up, and John Keane, who would do anything at all to keep from showing up anywhere. He wasn't supposed to be questioned, as we were beginning to realize that that was a large part of the, problem, the question with the pensions and, the city finances.
Yeah. And wow, thanks for that. Really interesting look back. Mm-hmm. Thanks for the call, Conrad.
Yeah, and Conrad, you mentioned the study, that the pension study, the city finances. J.F. Bryan, as you indicated, led that study and will be very involved in the citizen engagement pact. I was so pleased that he joined us last week. He and I were announcing this new pact. And you bring up the memory of Tony Bates, a man who always kept us accountable in government and brought a lot of good ideas. So thank you for those memories.
In 2014, JCCI undertook a project called Jack's 2025, where you laid out a sort of visioning process of how everyone who's involved in working toward creating a better community wants Jacksonville to look in the year 2025, and you issued a report about that. Is that still going to be something you'll be working with?
Yeah, I think that will be the foundation of the work, because we had over 2,000 citizens come forward, many on a Saturday morning, from all levels, to talk about their interests, their ideas, and we distilled into that 10 basic areas that the city needs to focus on for really, as we say, 2025, the next 10 years or so, thinking about where the city ought to go. And that was direct grassroots citizen involvement bringing forth those ideas.
We want your calls right now. Where do you think the city ought to go as JCCI folds up and becomes the new Citizen Engagement Pact? It's 549-2937. What do you think are the biggest issues facing this community? Richard on the north side. Hey, Richard, good morning.
Hey, Melissa, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
One of the questions earlier was, what should be studied? And I've always thought it would be very interesting to look at the impact of what happens when you take one income-earning African-American male out of the community and what that ripple effect looks like. What we have right now is the issue. We always talk about crime or putting African Americans back to work, or to prevent recidivism and things like that. And Garrett Bennis just issued something to have business owners be more proactive in hiring people with a record. So we know that going to prison removes you from being able to get a decent job. But how does that income decrease equate to the impact that it could have had in the economy had that person never went to prison? And the reason why I ask that is I would like to see a study of what happens if we actually pay prison labor minimum wage, $15 an hour. And I know at first thought that the political reaction is prisoners don't deserve to get paid. Yes, they do. And if we paid them $15 an hour and taxed it at 99.9%, which would be a prison tax, and then use that money to pay for childcare and police departments and all the other things that it relates to. The bottom line is we would remove the profit from the corporations that are making money off of prison labor and stocking that overseas and putting that back in the community. I would really like to see a heartfelt look at how crime and the prison profit is impacting that money not going to the black community, and what would that look like from the sense of having thousands of income-earning African-American males in the community rather than thousands of penny-earning African-American males in prison.
So thanks, Richard.
Is that possible to get that study off the ground?
Thanks, Richard.
It's a good suggestion, Richard, and it has some ideas in there that have been studied over the years through JCCI, looking at anything from a race relations study, which was done for many years, income inequality. And what Councilman Dennis is doing now is something that a number of us have been looking at for over many years, including the chamber most recently on the Ban the Box initiatives. How do we ensure there's equal access and opportunity for all?
And the Ban the Box initiative, which I know you've spoken about, that is taking the box off employment applications so that if someone has served time in prison, they don't have to disclose that, because that makes it so difficult for people to try to reenter society.
Exactly. And there's actually a bill in the state legislature pending this session to make it a statewide initiative.
What about some of his comments in terms of the whole issue of mass incarceration and how that has affected communities, particularly in Jacksonville's north and west sides?
Well, there's no doubt that it is an issue. And I know Sheriff Williams has spoken about this recently in looking at ways to address that issue, and will continue to do so. I think the main thing that Richard is talking about and deserves study is what can we do to make sure that all portions of our community have access to jobs and employment? Because I think we would all agree that that is really the best way to improve public safety to ensure full employment.
Will that be the focus of your next study?
It could be. Yeah. I mean, again, we're open to suggestions on the various organizations which will be involved, but it's a very valid topic to be studied.
Okay. And lots of suggestions for Kevin Hyde as JCCI becomes the JACS Pact or Citizen Engagement Pact. You can learn more at the website jackspact.org. 549-2937. John is in St. Augustine. Hey, John. Good morning.
Good morning. I follow the rationale. Well, let me say I'm interested in the transition of JCCI to JACS Pact. I don't think it's just another iteration. I think there's a lot of implications there. And I follow the rationale that you want to let experts be experts and lean on their resources, their funding streams, and not duplicate effort. But one of the things that can tend to happen is they can become kind of single-issue entities and get a little bit siloed. I was a big fan of JCCI as a convener, and I'm wondering about JACS Pact's role in that regard.
Well, that is something we will definitely continue to do. That is the hallmark of JCCI, the ability to convene people together of various interests, various ideas, to bring them together to try to reach consensus on an issue. So even though we will have any number of organizations and people involved in this, the central idea of coming together with different ideas and disparate thoughts, that is something that we will want to preserve the spirit of JCCI, absolutely. And I'm glad that you recognize that really was one of the hallmarks of what we were able to do.
Here's a tweet for you. The new JACS Pact should study the return on investment on tax cuts versus investments in education and infrastructure.
Very, very good suggestion. It keeps coming back, so many of these thoughts, to city and state finances and how government can be most efficient but also provide the most opportunities for our citizens.
Bryant on the South Side. Hi, Bryant.
Hi, Melissa. I have a follow-up question to one of the previous calls, and it's a specific. It has to do with reinstituting the Race Relations Progress Report, which JCCI did for years. It provided tremendously valuable information and insight into the quality of race relations in the city and into the racial disparities that exist across the board, and also into the disparities in perceptions and attitudes between blacks and whites in the city. The report made it clear that the racial disparities cut across all of the compelling issues, from healthcare disparities to the criminal justice system, all aspects of the criminal justice system, to educational disparities, to economic disparities. All of the sort of underlying theme, which helped to account for some of those disparities, were racial attitudes, which are very divided in town. And JCCI stopped doing that report 5 or 6 years ago. So my question is, do you plan to, and my suggestion actually is that you reinstitute the Comprehensive Race Relations Progress Report, which JCCI did for so many years?
I would hope that that's something that the new JACS Pact Citizen Engagement Organization could do. If JCCI were known for anything over the prior years, it would be the quality of life indicators as well as the race relations studies. And that is an important part not only of history but as we go forward. So I'm certainly sure that the new organizations will take that into account in deciding what to do. And I'm pleased, Melissa, to the quality of life study. We've already received commitments that will go forward.
That's a definite.
That is a definite.
Every year.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Mark on the South Side. Hey, Mark, thanks for holding. Go ahead. Hey, Mark, are you there?
Yes, ma'am. I'm sorry.
Hey.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah. I know of a company that hired a former felon, and the felon ended up stealing close to $10,000 worth of equipment from that company. I think one of the reasons why companies are afraid of hiring felons is because they don't want to hire people that they're going to end up stealing from their own company. Is there a way where maybe reducing sentences and the cost of prison terms and rehabilitating prisoners can go towards maybe providing an incentive for companies to go ahead and hire former felons, and if something were to happen, there should be like some type of an insurance policy, for instance, so that the companies can get reimbursed if something goes wrong. I mean, I think that's one of the reasons why so many companies are afraid of hiring former felons or people who have gotten out of jail.
Sure, and it's the issue you raise, and I, as a lawyer, I understand these issues. The fear of liability is real, and that's something employers have to face. And I know as city governments look at the Ban the Box initiative, as state legislatures look at the issue on a statewide basis, questions of how to address the possibility of liability to give employers comfort on that issue is something that is being addressed because it is real.
Let's take one more call for Kevin Hyde about the new JAKS Pact. Daniel in Riverside. Hey, Daniel. Good morning.
Hey. Hey, Melissa. How are you?
Doing great.
Good. So I had the pleasure of working at JCCI in communications, and I think it's such an important organization, and it's definitely something that I'm sad to see, you know, moving on. I know it's going to, you know, move into this new phase of existence, but I think it's something that the city is definitely going to be missing. It's going to create a hole in the city of having that independent, neutral convener that takes a look at those quality of life indicators. And I think one of the things that hasn't really been brought up yet is JCCI was the first, you know, project to be looking at those indicators on a community level. If you look at any books or anybody that talks about looking at indicators in communities, they'll always mention that Jacksonville was the first city to do it. And I think that that is something that the city is going to miss moving forward. I hope that, you know, looking at something like pulling together another Amelia Island conference happens, because I think Jacksonville really needs to step up and realize that if it wants to fix these issues, it has to invest in itself.
Well, all right. Thanks, Daniel. Time for another conference. Do you need to book some space at the Ritz-Carlton, Kevin?
Maybe if they want to donate the space.
There you go.
But the point that Daniel raises is very good. Jacksonville and JCCI in particular created the quality life indicators that is used by over 1,000 communities right now. We can be proud of that history, but also understand it needs to continue in Jacksonville. We're going to find a format that allows that to happen. And so I think the number of calls we received this morning indicate there's a real interest here. It's a question of how we make it, cause it to happen.
Please do keep us posted and go to the website, by the way, listeners, at JAKSPACT.org. Board Chair Kevin Hyde joining us to fill us in. And thanks so much for being here.
Thanks, Melissa.
Much more still ahead later. Local author Abby Vega, find out why she gave up a career in corporate America to drive a snow cone truck around town. But up next, why more young people are being stricken by colon cancer. That's next.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
Question: is there ever a bad time to buy an online travel company?
If there's life, there's travel. And people are gonna live, and people are gonna start traveling again. Let's go.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, the guy who runs Expedia, next time on Marketplace.
Weekday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Hi, I'm Rick Mullaney, director of the Public Policy Institute at Jacksonville University. Join me for WJCT's quarterly program, Policy Matters. Join the conversation as we speak with Lori Boyer, president of the Jacksonville City Council, on public policy affecting the future of Jacksonville. That's on the next Policy Matters, Thursday evening at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
Relax Radio, playing the soundtrack of your life nightly at midnight, only on 89.9 FM WJCT. Your community, your world.
Welcome back. Well, this month, March, kicks off today, and it's Colon Cancer Awareness Month. Every year, the CDC reports about 140,000 Americans are diagnosed with colorectal cancer. More than 50,000 die. Not only that, new research shows millennials, young people, have double the risk of colon cancer compared with their baby boomer parents and grandparents. Serious questions are being raised about whether differences in lifestyle or some other factor are explaining this curious increase. It's troubling because, of course, colorectal cancer is highly preventable, primarily by getting screened once you turn 50. But what to do about the young victims? With more, we welcome Dr. Victoria Gomez. She's a gastroenterologist at Jacksonville's renowned Mayo Clinic. Doctor, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me here.
And this is the month when we talk about this disease. Overall, colon cancer has really been declining since the 70s, and it's mainly afflicting older adults. But this year, we're learning that there's a troubling spike in millennials and Generation Xers dealing with colon cancer. What do you think is causing this increase?
Right. Well, those are very astonishing findings. While these findings are still undergoing more investigation, the thought behind it is that these lifestyle risk factors are probably playing a larger role than we previously thought towards the progression to cancer.
And we're talking diet and lifestyle, smoking, drinking, obesity, lack of exercise, lack of fiber in the diet.
Correct. The big one, I think, being obesity, with the obesity epidemic that we have in the United States, diets high in fat, low in fiber, we think these may be playing a larger role.
This is so striking because overall, the medical community has had a lot of success in reducing colon cancer rates.
Right. Yeah, that is correct.
Especially among older Americans.
Mm-hmm.
Is that just driven to people being more likely to go and get a screening?
Yes. Well, I think patients who listen to their healthcare providers and undergo screening beginning at the age of 50, you know, that's the beauty of a screening test for colorectal cancer, that we can detect not just cancers but precancerous lesions. However, we don't offer those same screening guidelines to the younger population, to patients under 50.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's when, who knows, maybe in the future we may need to modify our guidelines and we may have to start screening sooner.
We might see people as young as 35 being told to go get a screening.
You never know. That could always happen.
Wow. But of course, a screening is not the most wonderful thing one can undergo. But if for all adults over 50, you say it's so important. Why is it so important?
It's important because screening saves lives. That's the bottom line. And, you know, keep in mind, a screening test for colorectal cancer, we always think of the colonoscopy. Yes, that is the most common screening test and probably the most effective one. But there are other tests that can detect blood or abnormal DNA in the stool. Those are the stool tests that are also now being offered. And there are even certain types of CAT scans that look at the colon for large polyps. Now, if any of those tests were to come out abnormal, then we would need to follow up with a colonoscopy.
Is it possible to be developing this disease and have no symptoms? Is that why the screening is so key?
Absolutely. That's why screening is so important, that the earliest signs or symptoms of colorectal cancer is actually no signs or symptoms. And that's the whole goal, that we try and prevent from patients to get into the point where they have significant symptoms.
Now, this is the second most deadly cancer in the U.S., the third most common for both men and women. Do you have any special advice for women?
A few things, most definitely. I would say, first of all, you know, women, we take care of our significant others a lot. We take care of our children. We have, you know, we play many roles, wear many hats. But at the end of the day, we need to take charge of our lives and take charge of your health and talk to your provider about getting screened. The other thing, too, is that, you know, for many reasons, women tend to have more issues related to irritable bowel syndrome compared to men. So issues with bloating, abdominal pain, discomfort, diarrhea, etc. You know, if any of those symptoms are ever worrisome, rather than just blowing them off as just saying it's, you know, I just have an irritable bowel, it's always good just to get checked out by your healthcare provider.
And do you often see women preferring a female gastroenterologist such as yourself for some of these reasons?
That's actually, yes, a very good point. And a fact that there actually have been studies where they've surveyed patients and actually medical professionals and have found that there are oftentimes significant gender preferences for women. So women patients oftentimes will prefer a female gastroenterologist, not just to discuss their issues in the clinic, but also to undergo colonoscopy. And a lot of this is probably related to the embarrassment or the, you know, the privacy of the issues that are discussed with regarding bowel function and symptoms.
And what advice do you have for the men out there? Men, the studies show, tend to be dismissive of going and getting these annual tests done, and often to their own detriment.
Mm-hmm.
The guys should not blow this off.
No, absolutely. I mean, you know, we have a responsibility to take care of ourselves. Again, we know that screening for colorectal cancer saves lives. You know, with one high-quality exam, one high-quality test, we can pick up not only cancers at an early stage, but also pick up precancerous lesions, the polyps. We can remove polyps. We can treat early cancers. But what is difficult to treat is a cancer at a very late stage. And this can happen in adults of all ages. We're not just talking about very elderly. This can happen to someone in their early 50s. So it's very important to get screened, you know, just suck it up and do it. It's not the worst test. And it saves lives.
Everyone out there listening, I can see them shaking their heads. I can feel it. But you're right. It's important. And so with all of that said, if you're turning 50 this year, make that appointment for a colonoscopy. You'll be glad you did. Thanks for being with us. Victoria Gomez, MD. She's gastroenterologist at Mayo Clinic. Thank you.
Thank you.
Much more to come. Keep listening.
The next Fresh Air, Trump, Putin, and the new Cold War. We talk with David Remnick, the editor of The New Yorker, and Evan Osnos, who covers politics and foreign affairs for the magazine. They collaborated on a new piece about what lay behind Russia's interference in the 2016 election and what lies ahead. Join us weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Calling all artists, WJCT is celebrating 45 years on the radio, and we need your help to design the perfect anniversary t-shirt. Design should reflect what WJCT means to you or the First Coast community. The winning design will be featured on a limited edition t-shirt during our spring pledge drive. Get started now at wjct.org/45 years.
On the next Jazz Night in America, vocalist Cecile McLaurin-Sauvant and pianist Sullivan Fortner live in concert at Jazz and Lincoln Center and in conversation in Harlem. The intimacy of two of the most charming new voices in jazz. I'm Christian McBride, and that's on the next Jazz Night in America.
I've got your number.
Saturdays at 8 p.m. and Thursdays at 11 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, this area's premier women's leadership event, Generation W, is coming up at the end of this month. It always features incredible speakers. We have two right now in studios. We welcome Gen W founder Donna Orender. Good morning.
Melissa.
Good to see you. Also with us, Dr. Ilana Schrader. She's the chief medical officer of Guidewell Florida Blue, a $12 billion health solutions organization, parent company to Florida Blue, based here in Jacksonville. Doctor, good morning to you.
Good morning.
An incredible female leader here on the First Coast, Donna, and one of many that will be speaking at this event. What's on tap this year?
Well, our theme is imagination, innovation, and inspiration. And there should be no doubt to any of us how quickly the pace of change is happening. And yet most of us just have our head down, right? And then we pick it up and we go, my gosh, how did this happen, right? With, you know, digitization and all that's going on. And so we thought we'd focus on some of those relevant issues. And healthcare, it's like, I don't know, and sometimes you look up and you say, it's like looking at the sci-fi world in terms of all of what's happening. And healthcare is so important to us. And Dr. Schrader has a lot to say about that.
Yeah, give us a preview, if you could. Our whole health insurance system is up in the air right now. What will you be talking about?
Well, we are definitely evolving fast, the healthcare industry. I'll be talking on a panel exactly called Imagination, Innovation, and Inspiration. You know, a lot of people actually think that innovation is about the next shiny new coin, the sexy new thing. And it is. But it's also about the innovation of how we approach problems. It's about nifty new partnerships that we're going to have. It's about collaboration that we haven't thought about before. So we'll all on the panel be talking about the whole range from sci-fi to just new ways of thinking about things.
Right. So we have like a woman named Nina Tandon, which it is such a coup to get Nina to come here. I can't tell you. And she launched a new company called Epibone. And it's really about our ability to make our own bones. And you go, what?
Exactly. Exactly. What does that mean?
On March 31st, we will all find out exactly what that means and how that ties into our bigger ecosystem of health. And why it's so important to women, you know, Alana clearly is an outstanding scientist, physician, leader, business person, but she's also an outstanding leader as a female as well, and she has a really good sense of women's role in healthcare.
You know, GuideWell has been the sponsor for Gen W since its inception. We're so proud. Gen W is all about inspiring women and others and men to be the best they can be, to make a difference, to drive change. That's what we do at GuideWell. We inspire our employees every day to be the best they can be. And we really ask of ourselves and our employees to pause, to think about how we can do things better. So we love going to Gen W and taking our employees with us and enjoying the sort of thrill of being there amidst all this really cool innovation and inspiration. Yeah.
And you bring in amazing speakers, Donna. You founded this event as a way to promote women's leadership here on the First Coast and across the country. That's always been the goal. And
I mean, listen, it's national level event. So we have people that come in from all over the country. We have a big group of leaders that come down from New York and across, and that's important. And women's leadership is important and vital. And we want women to really feel that this is a place they can connect with not only others, but themselves. But bigger than that, communities. It's about building communities in cities. We're only as good as the talent we have, and we're in a global race for the best talent in the world. So if we don't invest in the best talent, which includes women, then we don't win in the way we want, you know? And so this has really evolved over time. You know, we've done this big research project that we're still engaged in, which is about women's leadership presence locally in every local market. Because if you don't really pay attention to what's happening, that's why I love to hear Kevin Hyde talk, right? Is he not one of the great citizens of our community? Always involved in talking about how do we as citizens be better?
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, I think about Pat Garrity, our CEO, who will be on our panel, and how much he contributes to the community and the state of Florida and national thought around healthcare every day. So these are inspiring leaders, and Pat goes out of his way to inspire the women around him as well, just like the men around him.
Which is why GuideWell is one of the leadership companies. I mean, for Jacksonville, this is all about putting the stake in the ground. If we're all here, we should have Jacksonville be a thought leadership city,
right?
And this is a contributing element to that. So if anybody out there is listening and wants to be part of incredibly positive energy, and we are not even, we'll come back and talk about some of our other topics, and I know, Melissa, a lot of them touch your heart as well.
Uh-huh.
Then March 31st is the day, and UNNF is the place.
That's right.
Alana's going to, Dr. Schrader's going to expect you there, and I never want to disappoint my doctor.
And yes, and we'll have more speakers on this program through the month of March that you'll be featuring, but now's the time for people to mark their calendar and attend. Is this the fifth annual or the sixth annual?
This is six.
Okay.
This is our sixth annual event, and every year, as for anyone who's come, we always have surprises. It's about dealing with the whole person. There's music and poetry, and there's dancing, and everybody participates in all that. But really, the kind of thinking and inspiration that and we'll have people talk about this. It's life-changing. And it's not just one day. You come for one day, but you get to keep the benefits all year long.
Generation W celebrating its sixth year on the First Coast. Register now at genwnow.com. WJCT is a media sponsor of this annual event. And Dr. Ilana Schrader is one of the speakers. There'll be lots of good ones.
Well, she's going to set the bar high. I just want to let you know that. So I'm so excited that she can be doing this because she's really been an incredible, positive thought leader and supporter.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And in a moment, author Abby Vega. Stay with us.
On WJCT's radio reading service at 8 a.m. weekday mornings, it's 3 hours of news, op-eds, and obituaries from your local newspaper. Here's a call we received from someone who listens online.
I'm very happy to tell you that my daughter found the app for the radio reading service on my tablet, and I'm using that, and it's excellent. I enjoy all the programs.
If you're living with blindness and want to hear what's in the paper, go to wjct.org/radio reading, underwritten by Florida Eye Specialists.
Every March, the people in this town go out to the surrounding cattle acreages and they cull the diamondback herds and they gather up 1.5 tons of rattlesnake. And why they tell you this in weight, I don't know.
Join us next time for stories of rescue, widowhood, and rattlesnakes. That's the Moth Radio Hour from PRX.
Saturdays at 3 on 89.9 WJCT. It's easy to listen to WJCT, even when you're not near a radio. Just visit WJCTnews.org from your phone or tablet. On our mobile site, you're just one click away from a 24-hour live stream of our programming, and you'll also have easy access to all of the top local news stories. Listen live on WJCT's mobile website, WJCTnews.org.
Welcome back. Finally, this hour, she spent decades working in sales and marketing for Fortune 500 companies, but it wasn't fulfilling her. So, Abby Vega quit her six-figure job and bought a snow cone truck. Yeah, and that experience led to incredible changes. They're all now in a book. Abby's book, The Snow Cone Diaries, tells the story of a woman who, despite having it all, needed to make a change, and what a change it became. Abby Vega, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Melissa, for having me.
It's so good to have you on the show. And by the way, let me just point out, people have probably seen your business around town. It's called Kona Ice, but it didn't start out that way. Let's go back to the beginning. You were working in corporate America for many years, but you weren't fulfilled.
Right. I thought I was living my dream working in corporate America, achieved very high levels, won all kind of awards, rings, plaques, and realized how empty all of those things really were in terms of my worth.
Yeah. And so from that sense, which so many people have, what prompted you to then say, I think I'm going to buy an ice cream truck and drive it around town, and that's what I'm going to do now.
Well, one would say insanity, or or the other would be the fact that I lost a very dear friend at the age of 53. right in the prime of her life. She was physically fit and went for a run and never came home. She had a heart attack.
Wow, yeah.
And then my mom that I was taking care of in my home for 17 years also passed away. And so I just felt like I needed to kind of refocus, regain my purpose in life, and do what finally would make me happy.
And there was something about the idea of a snow cone truck that you thought, that's fun, that's happy.
As a little girl growing up in Baltimore, there were snowball stands, they called them snowballs there, on every corner. And I wanted to have one as a young entrepreneur, but there was no place for me to do that. Mm-hmm. So I decided at 54, why not now purchase a snow cone truck on steroids, and instead of be limited to one corner, take it everywhere in Jacksonville and touch everyone's life.
What was that like?
Well, first there was the challenge of learning how to drive a 10,000-pound truck.
did you have any accidents?
I did not have any accidents, but I did fail truck driving in when I went to the franchise school to learn how to drive the truck. I did fail three times before I finally figured it out.
Oh, man.
And then living in Ponte Vedra, there was the challenge of looking at my neighbors who was like, okay, that's the crazy lady in Ponte Vedra that just bought a snow cone truck. But after that,
oh, that's funny.
What really got to me was the very second phone call I had as I owned the business, a woman from New Jersey called me and said, you can't say no to me. I have a very special request. Mm-hmm. And that very special request changed my life. She had a nephew who had a drug and alcohol problem, who for years would not seek rehab. And she finally had gotten him into rehab up in Homerville, Georgia. And she called me and crying and said, please, you can't say no to me. And I'm like, well, I'm not really sure what you're asking me, but mm-hmm. Okay, I'm listening. And so she asked me to do his 21st birthday party at this rehab facility. So as a mom, I took that as an opportunity to drag my 15-year-old son, who was about to get his driver's license, and do a teaching opportunity while also doing a random act of kindness. So we hopped in the car, drove 150 miles to the middle of nowhere, and we did a birthday party for this young man. And I don't know what happened, but when he finally came out and I saw the look on his face, I got off my truck and hugged a perfect stranger, and he and I both cried, and we both knew that this was exactly what we both needed in order to move forward with our life.
And that, I know you have more than one story like that. Now let's talk about what happened since you made this huge life change. You started with your truck, Kona Ice.
Right.
And what an incredible story from there.
It's been quite a ride. Before I owned Kona Ice, I know the local famous author, John Gordon. And when he wrote his first book, The Shark and the Goldfish, he spoke at our church, Our Lady Star of the Sea. And that same person that made me get off the truck and hug a stranger, that person took over me. And I walked up to John and said, well, you've written a very nice book, but I want to let you know, John, I can do what you do. I can do it better because I can write it from a female perspective. And he's like, oh, really? Let's see. And so for 5 years, we walked around Ponte Vedra together. I think he thought I was stalking him, but I really wasn't. We would just bump into each other. But he got the first email as soon as the book was completed. And I said, John, remember that story I told you I could write? I have it. Will you please read it and give me your thoughts before I make a fool of myself, and let me know that it's worthwhile? And I'm happy to say that I said, you might want to at least read to what I wrote about you. Uh-huh. And I think that was the hook. So he read it and gave me a great quote, and the rest is history.
And you published The Snow Cone Diaries, A Sweet Route to Happiness.
A sweet route. Yeah, there are exercises after every chapter that really make you think about how you can approach finding your own particular happiness. I'm pretty sure it won't be driving a snow cone truck, but there's something that will
light
you. Are
you still out there driving all the time?
No, I sold it. Okay. Because I want to focus my attention now on promoting this book. And really where I found my greatest joy is inspiring women in particular to find their happiness, their mission, their purpose in life.
And we all can really digest that message. It's such a pleasure to feature this on the program. She's Abby Vega, the author of The Snow Cone Diaries, A Sweet Route to Happiness. People can get a copy of the book online.
Yes, on my website, abby-vega.com or at amazon.com, either way.
And look out for Kona Ice, although she sold it, but you'll know it was Abby when you see that truck around town. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me, Melissa. I really appreciate it.
That's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs our board, and the show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chepchik. Never miss a show. Download the WJCT app and listen anytime. Next on 1A, is your vision for America as optimistic as the president's? That discussion's coming up. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.